And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Tonight we're going to talk to the man who invented the veggie burger. But that's not the subject tonight. Got you puzzled? Stick around and find out next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. So he went from the veggie burger to discovering strange attractions, the world's only shop dedicated to chaos theory and social lessons inherent in the discovery of just self-organizing systems throughout the world, maybe even the universe. Welcome back. It's been about 5 years. Gregory Sams. Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm very well, George. Good morning from London. Looking, good evening to you.
How's the weather out there today?
It's really warm. Very warm, lovely day.
You know, when you developed the veggie burger, I don't want to spend too much time on that because you've done some other things since then.
Right.
I mean, the world just grasped this concept. I mean, we went into health food and everything else. How did you just stumble across this?
Oh, I didn't stumble across it. I'd been introducing people to things like brown rice and pumpkin seeds and sesame seeds for years and realized that once you get people introduced to these basic products, they've got no loyalty. They're not going to go buy your brown rice, and somebody else else could always put it in a bag for a penny cheaper than I could. So I actually sat back and created this product, the veggie burger, and I thought, well, let's come out with an alternative to fast food, and let's make it cheaper instead of more expensive, because vegetables are supposed to be cheaper than meat. So the veggie burger was really cheap. You got the makings of 4 burgers in a pack for less than a dollar, which was cheap in 1982, exploded into the market.
Well, good for you.
And the word went into the language. I mean, I trademarked veggie burger because it wasn't thought to be a descriptive word at the time, which is hard to believe now, but it was then.
You know, I was working on something years ago. I mean, I must have been about 24 years old, 25. I had this great idea to take real fruit, smash it up, and then freeze it. And I wanted to call it Fruity Pops. Uh-huh. And this was way before any of these specialized fruit popsicles have popped up. And, God, I missed the mark, Greg. I should have come out with that.
You should have done it. You could have gotten off the late-night radio show.
No, I'd never do that. Never do that.
No, so, this is more fun. Because once you do something like that, if it's a success, you're committed to it, and it ties you down.
Now, this metamorphosis, which leads us into Son of God, your latest book, how did that come about?
Well, it came about through change. It's all a little bit connected, but I like doing things that nobody else has done before. So I'd never come out with a new brand of cornflakes and try and edge in on that market. And chaos theory, I saw that the scientists, it was a really exciting new science, but I realized they'd never apply that to social things, because sociology is kind of a dirty word for classical scientists. And I wanted to get chaos theory across to the people so people understood how well things self-organize. My tack there was to show us how we self-organize much better and create stable structures much better than does a government who's saying, this is how we want it to be, whatever their vision is, and then passing legislation to try and force the course of civilization in a particular direction. And you usually get weird things popping out the sides when they try and do that. So that led to my first book, The State is Out of Date, We Can Do It Better.
And that's what I believe we talked about 5 years ago, wasn't it?
No, we were talking about Son of God 5 years ago, actually.
Okay.
The State is Out of Date, we might have touched upon, but that's just been re-released now because a lot of people are really frustrated with the government and wonder, why isn't politics working and what could? And that's what that book addresses. It was way ahead of its time initially. Now it's right on the mark. And it was after that I wrote Son of God, which was kind of going from the temporal to the spiritual level and doing for the organized, encrusted religions what the State is Out of Date did to these overgrown, all-powerful governments that are trying to run us. So one was sort of temporal change, one was spiritual change.
In 5 years since you've been with me, governments have run amok. And They've just tried to take over everything on this planet and control us. You know, look at the NSA spying situation and all that. I mean, it's out of control, Greg.
It's appalling. And the real problem is that you cannot forcibly direct the course of civilization in one direction, whether this is what type of house you can have, this is what sort of medicine you can you're allowed to have, this is what type of, you know, all these different regulations that just bind us down. And of course, they don't work. And when they don't work, the government says, well, we need tighter, we need more regulations, more tight control, and heavier penalties. And it just gets worse and worse till we have no freedom to operate. But, you know, brilliantly, the internet has been, you know, people are creating new structures on the internet, which is, despite the NSA spying, it's still by and large a free area. So you get things like Airbnb and Amazon and eBay operating, and they don't need police forces, judges, and prisons to deal with that stuff. They just get it out of the system. They get bad guys out of the system, buyers and sellers, as efficiently as possible without needing that stifling regulation that the state brings us. But, yeah, the mask has dropped. So many people now realize, or in their bones, that however much money the government has, they're not going to sort things out and bring us a clean environment, safe food, and happy, healthy children.
No, not at all. And, you know, the internet, since you brought it up, to me is a blessing and a curse. And the blessing is, of course, it has allowed the masses to socialize, to get information immediately. You know, you don't have to wait to have it given to you. And you can do your own research into just about any issue you have, whether it's health, food related, or your health, or anything. Mm-hmm. The curse is that it has opened up government's ability to spy on you and do everything else. Reading our emails. I mean, come on. My gosh.
I find that hard to believe. And I find it hard to believe that people are just kind of accepting of this. You know, when it's not that long ago, they needed a court order to open one of your letters. You know, privacy is such a thing that we're entitled to. And to have that just taken away is outrageous.
How freaked out we'd be when we'd get a letter and it looked like it may have been opened and resealed?
I know. I used to occasionally do that when I was sending letters to somebody. I'd forgot to put something in, and I'd put a little note saying, I reopened this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean,
that was just a letter. Now, you know, we send emails back and forth, and, you know, who knows who's reading them on the other
end? Yeah.
You know, you just don't know.
Well, the state is really, their main interest is their own survival, suppressing any kind of dissent. And I think that if you look through history, you would find that every great empire probably had more regulations, soldiers, police, enforcers in its last few years of existence than it did in its entire prior history. If you look at America, it started off really small, very tiny government. And I think that was the real secret of success in the early American history, was there wasn't much government. Forget what type of government it was. It was really small.
That's right. And it was efficient. It worked.
It worked. And as it grows and grows, it just finds more things to do that cost more money, takes more money from us. Back in the days of George Washington and King George III, taxes never got beyond 5-10% overall. And we got to 10% during wars. Then the war was over, they'd send the soldiers back to the land, and the taxes would go back down. But they've been creeping up since the First World War, and if you add them all together now, it's around half of all the production we create each year goes to the state. And that's why we have so much poverty, hunger, homelessness, unemployment. We're being sucked dry.
Yeah.
And what I try and do, and the state is out of date, we can do it better, is stop people from thinking, we need more controls, give the government more money to solve the problems, because that is the problem. And they're not going to, You know, they say, look, we're going to do something about fuel and energy use, and we have this terribly named stuff called biofuels. And I don't know how many people realize that biofuels consume more energy in their production than they deliver, which is an insane deal. And then you've got almost half the American corn crop going to feed automobiles rather than people, and you know, as biofuel. And then we're told that, well, we can't farm sustainably, organically, because there's not enough land to feed everybody. And yet they waste money growing corn to feed cars.
And you know what? I've talked to a couple experts here, Greg, who say that they could do both, that there's an abundance here of being able to continue with the crops, bearing a drought or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it all comes down to control, don't you?
It's control, there's control of the government by corporations. So look at something like biofuels, just to go back to that. I thought America was suddenly energy rich through fracking. You've got all this energy through, you know, blasting away Mother Earth underground. Why do they still need, you know, biofuels, ethanol? Well, there's so many corporations involved getting kickbacks, government subsidies, the whole... It's so plugged into the state that will just keep going on.
If you could change anything right now with just the swing of a magic wand, what would it be?
I would, I don't think it's a magic wand. I think what might happen someday is we might hit the cliff edge that we narrowly averted in 2008 with a global financial meltdown, because as we know, fiat currencies always fail.
Yes.
This whole governmental structure we have across the world is based on faith in imaginary currencies. And if that does collapse, it's a situation we've never experienced before, sovereign bankruptcy. We could experience very harsh, very tough times, but it's also the opportunity to restructure using the wonderful intelligence, the software, the technology, the inspiration that human beings have to start running ourselves with the sort of checks and balances that you have in Airbnb and Amazon, without that state regulation, with people regulating through comments, recommendations, reviews. That stuff really works.
When do you think, Greg, and we've seen it happen over the years with the Arab Spring, you know, uprisings in Greece, Thailand's got problems now. When do you think it's going to hit home in the United Kingdom and the United States? When are people going to say enough is enough? We're going to have like a major march coming up soon here in the United States, where people are going to ask government officials to resign. Mm-hmm. But when do you think they will just simply say, we're fed up with this? Enough is enough. You've overtaxed us. You've overdone everything. We're done with this. And they start, let's hope, nonviolently to uprise.
Yeah, well, I can't. Violent uprisings don't work.
No, you know, everybody gets killed.
And everybody got killed. They've got, not only they've got the guns, they're good at that. They're really good at that sort of stuff. So nonviolence, a la Gandhi, a la Occupy movement, this is the way forward. And there's a lot of sovereign individuals, people finding out that the income tax is actually an illegal, unlawful activity. That's hard to assert, though. When will it happen? I don't know if that will happen before the governments themselves collapse. If the governments collapse, that is what people, in a sense, are looking for. We've had enough, because whoever you put in there, and we've seen this happen in Egypt, in the Arab Spring, in so many different nations, where a tyrant has been overthrown by the people, and they put in somebody else who becomes a tyrant, or their successor becomes a tyrant. And that's putting somebody else in the controls is not the answer, which is really what my book is about, because that's... It's just such a, well, I suppose it's the coercive mechanism that doesn't work. Everything that the state does is based on the principle do this or we're going to damage you somehow. And that's what doesn't work. Even if I ruled the world, you know, I would say, I don't want to rule the world. Let me make that straight.
Yeah.
But, you know, people like me would say, okay, we're going to ban chemical fertilizers. We're going to ban meat production. We're going to ban this. We're going to subsidize that and tax that. That's not the way forward. You don't push yourself into these things. People get what people want. And as human beings, we're really good at coming to solutions when we're faced with a problem. The state is more likely to turn that problem into an institution and, you know, hire thousands of people to be looking after it and taking care of the unemployed rather than actually figuring out ways not to have people unemployed.
Are you concerned at all, Greg, that this is all going to collapse around us?
I think it could. I mean, you look at what the government did to stop the financial collapse in 2008. They gave hundreds of billions to banks in this strange deal where the banks print the money out of thin air, lend it to the government, and the government's promised to pay it back with taxes from us. That was such an extreme, bizarre measure, but had that collapse happened in 2008, the government would have been bankrupt. They wouldn't have had money to pay themselves, to pay the military, to pay all their Social Security benefits, and we'd have been on our own. Now, that's a harsh situation, but it's one that if we come out of it, we could come out of it and look back and think this is the best thing that ever happened. We actually were liberated and we realized that we can do it ourselves. I mean, even you see situations, whether it was Hurricane Sandy or Operation Shock and Awe in Iraq. After those things happen, people do get together. They figure out how to rebuild the infrastructures that were destroyed, whether it's by bombs or hurricanes. And we're very good at doing that. It's quite surprising when it happens. Obviously, Iraq fell apart later on when you got sectarian violence and all of that. But the initial response was that they got their power back. They fed each other. People cooperate. That's what human beings do. And we've given so much of that responsibility over to the state, saying, well, they have to look after that. And when we gave them that responsibility, it was the best, with the best will in the world, perhaps. Perhaps we thought, yes, the central government should be running this, but they don't do a good job of it. That's the thing we must be aware of.
Can we overcome this? Can we win eventually? The people?
I think we can. I think in my bones, and I think in all of our bones, we know that it is possible for human beings to live together in peace and harmony without needing somebody telling us how to do it. So the possibility is there. Getting there is obviously not an easy route. Okay, if everybody stopped paying taxes overnight, that would do it. But whether you could ever get that or not, I don't know. Protesting in the streets, it might help. It helps people feel good, but they've got the police well trained. Police do what they're told. They've got, I don't know about the FEMA camps, whether they exist or not. I think they probably do.
They probably do. Stay with us. We're going to come back, Greg, talk a little bit more. Also about your work, Son of God, which was your earlier book. We'll be back. Welcome back. Gregory Sams with us here. We'll take calls with him next hour. Greg, when you also wrote the book, Son of God, you realized that the Son was much more than what science says it is, didn't you?
That's correct. I realized that, you know, the default mode, wherever you went in the world for millennia, was to recognize that that which brought us the light of life knew life itself. So people regarded the Son as a living entity, something possessing of consciousness and awareness, rather than as an accidental ball of light in the sky, some dumb dead ball of gas. And the only reason we lost that understanding was because they started burning people for having that when Christianity became married to the Roman Empire. That became, you know, the worst crime you could commit. And there's nothing scientific about regarding sun worship as primitive and ignorant. That was propaganda. And when I started to look into the research, the solar science and cosmology, I found that all the data I was picking up on fit much better with the idea of stars being living entities rather than dumb balls of gas.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And when it acts up, it sure affects us, doesn't it?
It sure does. But the coronal mass ejection, which I think you're talking about, the thing that could wipe out all of our, our power lines and communication.
One of those X flares, huh?
The super X flares. The last one of those was the Carrington event in the 19th century, and people actually loved it. They went out, the skies were beautiful, they were lit up, you could read a newspaper in Havana at midnight, and the only technological problem was a few telegraph lines burnt,
right.
You know, melted.
Today, if that happened, it'd be a different story.
It would be a different story, but that's not a malevolent act by the sun. That's something the sun's been doing for, you know, thousands of years. How we would respond to that, how bad it would hit, it depends. You know, a coronal mass ejection or an X flare doesn't cover the whole Earth. It hits the point that is facing it when the Earth goes through its path. If the Earth goes through its path, so you might get North America, or you might get Africa.
Greg,
you might get Europe.
What did you think of the Mayan calendar moment, the December 21st, 2012? Everybody was, you know, it's the end of the world, or it's this, or it's that. What did you think was going to happen, if anything?
I didn't know whether anything was going to happen, and it wasn't a specific date. It was a sort of central date of when something might happen. And I didn't really head for the hills on that one, and nothing did happen. So that's nearly neither here nor there. But they did pick a date when humanity as a whole seems to be moving towards a bad spot. And I remember sitting around with a few old hippies in sort of the mid, just, you know, about 6 years before it, and we were talking about the volcano in Yellowstone Park and various things that were going on and 9/11. And we were, and at one point I just said, gee, I hope the Mayans are right. I hope we do make it to 2012, because it wasn't looking like it then.
That's true. That's a good point. How long have you been out in the United Kingdom? I mean, you sound American. Are you?
I do, yes. I've still got an American accent because I went to American schools, but I've been here most of my life.
And would you ever move here to the States?
I'm waiting for regime change, George.
Well, people have been waiting for 40 years for that, you know?
I know.
Because they're all the same. They're all the same. Do you find that the United Kingdom is different than the United States? I mean, do people act differently than they would here?
People are much freer here. It's very hard to turn somebody's head here, because there's a lot of tolerance for different cultures, for different ways of thinking and doing things. That's, you know, England have always claimed eccentricity, valued it. America, not so much, generally speaking. The last time I was in America, a couple of years ago, I was so surprised there were hardly any CCTV cameras, whereas you can't turn around in England without seeing one. We are the most filmed society in history, I expect.
Do people complain about that?
Pardon?
People complain about that?
No, they don't. They don't.
Huh.
I think in America, they people would probably shoot them out if they put too many of them up.
Too many. I mean, already some of the courts are knocking down the red light cameras, that we call them, the cameras that catch you going through a red light, for example.
They have so many of them. That's one of my pet peeves. Like you mentioned it in the book, the state is out of date. They've got all these intelligent traffic lights over here that can tell, you know, read your face, your license plate, how fast you're going, but they still haven't put that bit of intelligence in them that stops them from turning red when there's no traffic.
Yeah, exactly. Or they turn yellow, then red, and catch you at something that you shouldn't have, you should have been allowed to go through.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things. Where do you see all this headed, Greg, in the next 5 years? What's your crystal ball say?
My crystal ball says that that whole structure of the state is going to collapse at some point from its own ineptitude, because they're going to, you know, the actual economy is going down to a point where there's less money for them to feed upon. And, you know, the more they take out of society, the less society is able to give them. And when we saw the Soviet Union collapse, nobody pushed that.
And nobody expected it either.
And nobody expected it. Just suddenly this whole global structure collapsed. People lost faith in it, or it lost faith in itself, or it lost the money to operate. Now, unfortunately, instead of people replacing that, you had the mafia move in and take over those controls and start, you know, taking the taxes in and running it themselves. And that's unfortunate, but people always think we need another state. And in fact, our history shows us that we have lots of instances in the past where we had civilizations lasting for sometimes a few thousand years that did not have top-down coercive control. People were free, they self-organized, they had trade, they had religion, they had civilization, and they didn't have shepherds and sheepdogs barking at them, telling them what to do. And we forget that because they didn't write the history of their period. We have the archaeological evidence. And we have that happening in the medieval times. You had a lot of medieval cities that put walls around themselves,
mm-hmm.
ran themselves as peasants' communes because they weren't nobles, they weren't princes, and they kept the nobles with their thugs on horseback out. So Florence was a city like that. Florence, the engine of the Renaissance, for much of the three centuries in medieval times, self-ran itself, and they had hospitals, they had schools, universities. They had a well-functioning society with trade guilds. Businessmen joined guilds to make sure that there weren't, you know, rogue cowboy traders giving themselves a bad name. So it was self-regulating, and it worked, and you had the Renaissance coming out of that wonderful city. But you had hundreds of cities in medieval Europe who kicked out the nobles for a few hundred years. We can do it, and today we're more connected than we've ever been before, and it's connection. When human beings are connected, they make magic, which is why in some of the pre-Soviet Union countries, they used to have a license to own a typewriter because they were so frightened of people communicating with each other, because that gives us power.
And, you know, as you mentioned, nobles, first time I've heard that since I watched the movie Braveheart with Mel Gibson.
Right.
Is there tension in the United Kingdom anymore, Greg? I mean, are there any concerns about China, Russia, or anything like that?
No. The main concern in England is whether we need the European Union or not. People should be part of the European Union or not. And, of course, as you might guess, I've always been very anti-Europe, the European Union, just on the basis we have all these national governments already bleeding us dry, and the last thing we need is another level of government on top of that is even less responsive to anything we say. I used to be in the food business, and the common agricultural policy has long been regarded as insane, as a completely crazy operation, and that's the government involved in agriculture, because we used to have this wonderful feedback loop where farmers grew what people wanted to eat. And that worked fine for thousands of years. Government said, no, food's so important, we have to get involved. And now farmers live on state subsidies. If they didn't get their subsidies, they'd go bankrupt.
Yeah, they would.
That's a really sad state of affairs, because that's an important feedback loop. And farmers should be making their living growing food for us, not on state subsidies.
It's going to be interesting times ahead, Greg.
They are very interesting. It's exciting times. but I'm happy not to be 18 years old wondering what's going to be happening in the future.
Yeah, but that's you bring up an interesting point. What about our grandchildren and our children? I mean, what kind of future is in store for them?
I haven't got a crystal ball, George. I really hope that, and I believe we can pull this planet out of the nosedive that we're going into. I'm concerned about nuclear power. That's the one thing, you know, I don't really think we can be confident that 20,000 years from now, which is 10 times as long as it is since Jesus Christ walked on Earth, yeah. If he did, that we will be able to still be managing that. You know, our governments are thinking, yeah, we're going to still be around keeping a handle on things, you know, 10,000 years from today. And you look back in history, you think, how many empires have come and gone in that period? It's really quite arrogant to think we can control the future to that degree. But humans are fantastic. And I do think that we can build a good future if the current economic system collapses. Ultimately, that is a good thing because it's an unsustainable economic system. It's not based on reality. It's based on smoke and mirrors and printed money. And if that does collapse, I think we have got the technology and the talent to build something that can last longer and that can solve problems without making them worse. And I hope we go that way, but it's up to us. It's up to our kids and our grandchildren and us to determine what that future is like, not up to a government saying, this is how it's going to be, we're going to take more taxes and force it that way, because that system doesn't work.
Do you feel, as so many people do, something impending, something big is about to happen?
I do.
Yeah,
I certainly do. But what it's going to be, it's like a runaway train, and you don't know whether it's going to come off on the bridge or the curve or the tunnel. You just know it's out of control. And where and when and how it collapses, I don't know. I mean, the Yellowstone volcano could change, could tip the balance.
It sure could.
A war in the Ukraine could tip the balance. A butterfly's wing flap could tip the balance, as we know.
Dead honeybees could flip the
balance. Yeah, honeybees could tip the balance. There's just so many negative possibilities, but the positive possibility is billions of human beings with skills, wants, and needs.
Sometimes it kind of makes you want to live in a hole and just eat a veggie burger, right?
No, I don't want to live in a hole and just eat one thing. I'm sorry.
All right. Well,
I'll take issue with you on that.
But it sounds like that, you would help fight the good fight.
I've been doing that all my life. Since I was 18 years old, I've been doing work that is aimed at putting this planet back on the right path. And then it was organic foods, natural foods. Then I introduced the first veggie burger, which was sort of an old, I'm not saying everybody should be a vegetarian, but saying meat should not be on the top throne of that's the main thing we eat. It's an incidental food if you do want to eat it. And as we know now how meat farming really does damage the planet, 70% of our food is fed to animals. Their farts, if you excuse the word, pollute the atmosphere as much as CO2. So I've always been doing stuff that's going to help avert the disaster that might be coming. And I wouldn't be doing that if I thought it was hopeless.
Sure.
I've probably published a couple of magazines, done all sorts of things, because there can't be any more important work on the planet than trying to heal it and stop our aggressive destruction of it.
What do you think of extraterrestrial life out there? Possible?
I think there's got to be extraterrestrial life out there. I've got no questions about it. I just think, when I was growing up, you always had this image of the spaceship landing and the aliens come out and they go up to some passerby and say, "Take me to your leader." Well, I got to say, if there was an intelligent alien visiting this planet, the last thing they would want to be taken to a leader, because they go straight to Area 51 or some NSA interrogation room.
If you had a chance to chat with Edward Snowden, the one who released the NSA stuff, what would you ask him?
I'd love to give him a copy of The State is Out of Date, We Can Do It Better, and see what he thinks about it, because
he'd like it.
I think he would. I'd love to get his opinion on it. I'm not quite sure how you contact him without the NSA finding out where he is. But I'm hugely appreciative of what he has done, and Private Manning, and people who are willing to sort of stick their heads up and tell us what's going on, because it's so important to know that. And I just cannot believe that there are people in America who think he should be in jail.
Yeah, I know that. We're with Gregory Sams, of course, a couple of his books, The State is Out of Date and Son of God. His website is his name, gregorysams.com, which is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Greg, do you travel much?
I have traveled quite a bit, yeah. I've sustained some shoulder injuries recently, which make it more difficult. I've been in a wheelchair since I was 18 years old. That didn't stop me traveling, but the shoulder damage did. So I travel, but not an awful lot now. I have been all over the world.
Can people email you through your website?
Yeah, email me to greg@gregorysams.com.
Well, you've got a refreshing outlook in life. I like that.
Thank you. I do, too.
All right, stick with us. We're going to come back. We're going to take phone calls just about The State is Out of Date. I want to get your reaction to things, and get ready to make the call. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Make sure you are liking us on Facebook and following us on Twitter. How do you do that? Well, it's all up there at the far right-hand corner of coasttocoastam.com.